Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
Today we continue our foray into Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban with chapters 3 and 4, The Night Bus and The Leaky Cauldron. In these chapters, Harry hitches a ride on the magical Uber of the 90s. And he gets to stuff his face with 2 weeks' worth of Florian Fortescue's ice cream. Why can't my life be like that?
I know, man. When he gets to the Leaky Cauldron, I'm like, you're living the dream there, buddy. So, yeah.
But that's not where he ends up. So, the chapter 3, the night bus, Harry has not been kicked out. He has left number 4, Privet Drive, and is just, you know, walking down the street in the middle of the night.
Yeah. So, he's busted out of the Dursleys' house, thank God. And is kind of gets down the street a little bit, and I liked this, but after 10 minutes alone in the dark, a new emotion overtook him, panic, because he had that momentary, like, I just need to get out of here, but now it's, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm a wizard in the Muggle world, and I'm not supposed to use my magic, you know, I just used it inadvertently in a big way, So what am I going to do? I did think it was funny that thought just kind of escapes his head pretty quickly. He's like, but a little bit more magic couldn't hurt. So
what I found really annoying, he didn't have any Muggle money either. Harry, why did you not get Muggle money? Like, Gringotts does have a currency exchange.
That's a great point, because I was thinking, he has all of this money in the wizarding world, and then he leaves that world and is just like, well, guess I'm SOL. I guess that's
yeah,
what he did.
Well, I don't know, again, because the last time he was at Gringotts was his very first time with Hagrid. But I don't know, maybe couldn't he have, like, maybe mailed by owl, like, in the springtime? Like, oh, can I, you know, do some sort of wire transfer, whatever the equivalent is, to make sure that he wasn't left high and dry when he knows the Dursleys aren't going to do shit for him?
I mean, you would think that maybe, you know, let's just throw some of these adults under the bus. Let's just know that, like, we know that Harry's going back to the Dursleys and they're not going to treat him well. And obviously the people at Hogwarts know that as well. So couldn't somebody have just run him to the bank, you know, after school one day or something? I don't know.
I don't know, but there's also the sense that, you know, if they gave him, if he had his own money, like Muggle equivalent, like what would he do with it, I guess? Because honestly, if I were Harry and I had Muggle money, like, I knew I couldn't, like, get away with being away from Privet Drive all the time, but I would just be like, peace out, I'm going to London for a week and I'll be back, you know, whenever.
Yeah, I guess my only thought about not allowing him to have the money there is that the Dursleys might have taken it from him, found a way to.
Oh, you know. This is true. Like, he wouldn't trust that they wouldn't find it.
Yeah. I just feel like knowing them and kind of their love of money and wealth and their jealousy of Harry, I'm sure they would kind of, I'm imagining them saying something like, well, you've lived with us for the past X number of years. You owe us rent. So hand the money over. That's, I don't know.
So, yeah. So Harry's in a pickle where he doesn't know at this point whether his fate is already sealed and whether doing any bit more magic at this point would make a difference or not.
Yeah. So at that point, he's like kind of putting together a little scheme of how he's going to make his trunk float and then cover himself with the invisibility cloak. But then he, I think, kind of logically thinks, well, I need a flashlight because he hears some noise and it has a prickling on the back of his neck. So he's kind of freaked out. So he lights his wand. And that apparently is a signal to the night bus.
Yes, but before the night bus comes crashing around, what does he see when he lights his wand?
Isn't a black dog? Is that right?
So, something big and furry. And it's described as he's not sure exactly what it was, but when he later sees the like picture on the book cover.
Yes, the Death Omens book cover.
Yeah, like, and when he sees that, he kind of equates that, yeah, I think that's what I saw. So at this point, he's kind of presuming that it's a dog.
Which we've talked about, and I think especially in their Gothic podcast, the black dog and as an omen of death. So
Yes, and I think when Amanda and Kevin were here for in the Philosopher's Stone talking about how dogs were often associated with death because they were scavengers, you know, gnawing at bones and stuff.
Oh, pups. I don't know. I don't have a problem with dogs. I don't have a problem with cats. I do have a problem with seeing a death omen. That's a little intense. So basically that's the catalyst for him to, if I'm saying this incorrectly, please help me out, but light his wand or, you know, say Lumos, right? Lumos. That's how you say it. And have his wand help him see. But then, and then we get the night bus shows up.
Yes, which, again, Harry was not technically calling it, but that's just how it works, that you basically throw your wand out as you would throw your thumb out for a hitchhiker, and then it just appears.
I mean, how convenient is this whole thing for him? Because I really didn't know how he was going to get out of this for a little while. But lucky that I also think it's great that there's this service for the wizards. That they're just basically traveling around to help wizards in a pickle out, pretty much.
I think it's kind of implied that to apparate, just to like teleport in and out of places, it's kind of described in this world as being significantly quite challenging. And so a lot of wizards who maybe like aren't the most powerful rely on these types of transportation, the night bus, broomsticks, the flu network, all of those.
Oh, yeah, because that was one of Harry's ideas, right? That was his kind of main idea is to fly to Hogwarts, just cover himself in the invisibility cloak and fly.
Yeah, that's basically what he was thinking. Like, that's all I can do at this point.
Well, thank God for the old night bus. And I think his name is Stan in the...
Stan Shunpack.
Yeah. Apparently cursed with some acne. I feel your pain, Stan. And, but I don't know, seems pretty helpful, but also has a, I don't know what accent this would be.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm just not familiar enough with distribution of dialects over the English countryside to know what exactly this is trying to, you know, that this, you know, writing style is reminiscent of whichever accent.
It's always interesting when, and Harry does a good job of capturing it here. It's interesting because you can kind of hear it in your head, but it's also a little challenging to read, at least it is for me. But you kind of get used to it. But I have no idea about the English, the different accents.
Even though I have a degree in linguistics, this just was not my field.
I know about a little bit about American accents. I just know that I think British people are often stereotyped of having like, what do they call it? Like the Queen's English, but that's just not necessarily the case. There are so many.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like our wide sides of the spectrum. You know, people only think of like posh, like standard American English and the Southern twang when there's everything in between. Likewise, England is reduced to either, again, the Queen's English or like this super heavy, like Yorkshire accent.
Yeah. And that it is much more diverse than that. But when we're on the night bus and he's talking to Stan, Harry says his name is Neville Longbottom. And I thought, is that because you think you're going to be in trouble and you're throwing Neville under the bus, which is like my favorite thing to say tonight? Or, you know, I kind of...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. It took me a while to get the pun, but I caught up.
Yeah, it was very unintentional on my part. But I then realized he doesn't want everybody on the bus to know that Harry Potter is on the bus. He's just trying to do a little incognito.
Yeah, like work. This, like, honestly, it's possible he would have done this even without him being in crisis mode, just because, again, we've kind of learned at this point, you know, it's book three, he's been a few years at Hogwarts, and especially after experience like Gilderoy Lockhart, he's over the fame that's been attached to him.
Yeah, right, right. He just doesn't want to have anything to do with the admiration. And I mean, it's funny too, as we get further along in the chapter, people are talking about him. And I think that just kind of helped me realize in his world how big of a name that he is. I mean, I know he's a big name and we talk about it throughout the story, but it's always people kind of in his surroundings, not kind of a little, a slice of life into the wizarding world and just how they talk about different things. It was kind of interesting.
Go ahead. He clambers up onto the night bus and it's like beds. And it's like, I love the, you know, what is it? Like 11 sickles, like 13 and you get hot chocolate, 15, you get hot chocolate and a toothbrush in the color of your choosing. Way to really splurge on that.
Luxury, all about luxury on this bus.
Yeah, it just reminded me of current capitalism, of how they hike on all of these quote-unquote fees, and it's just like, can't you just have people be comfortable just for the sake of being comfortable?
That would be great. Yes.
It reminds me of my dad and his bemoaning of when the airlines were deregulated.
Yes, yeah.
Because the idea was, you know, in my dad's time, like in the 70s, like in 60s, like flying was, you dressed up to go flying.
Right.
And they didn't pack you like sardines. Not that there have been, like for all the safety regulations that have advanced, like we just pack people like sardines. Like, again, flying, especially all the stuff I have to do, like being on a plane for 9 hours, it's miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I remember being a kid and being excited to get on a plane and, you know, whatever. And now it's just like, that's just the most stressful part of getting anywhere. It used to be fun, but, and I know what you're talking about because I've been looking at various things where you have a quote unquote base price. And then it's like, but if you want to like be able to open the door, that's $5. And it's just like, are you kidding me? So we're getting a little bit of that in the...
That just reminds me of, okay. So I thought it was overpriced, but I was really hungry. But I was on a flight, like as a teenager, I wanted a little packet of Pringles. And they weren't accepting any cash, just credit cards. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So I pull out my credit card and give it to her. And the woman looks at me and is like, you seem to be too young to have a credit card. And I'm just thinking, if you don't accept cash anyway, shut your freaking mouth and don't say things like that.
Also, you're on a flight. Like, I don't know. Well, that's very rude. People don't need to be judging. They don't know what your life situation is. That's what I would say. Lady, you don't know my life, so back off.
You don't know my life, and especially when this is the only option of payment, shut up.
Right, exactly.
But Harry settles in as well as he can. And they take off with a loud bang. And, you know, the night bus, you know, isn't following any road. And it's not even dodging anything because anything the night bus comes in front of, it just, like, magically, like, jumps out of the way and then goes back when the night bus passes.
This is quite the experience and contraption, I guess, for lack of a better term. This night bus is, I don't know. It's something else.
And so Harry takes a peek at Stan's newspaper And of course, it's the Wizarding newspaper, the Daily Prophet, and he sees Sirius Black on there. He's like, he was on the Muggle news.
Yeah, so this guy's causing problems in the Wizarding world and the Muggle world. And my favorite part of that news story was, while Muggles have been told Black is carrying a gun, a kind of metal wand that Muggles use to kill each other, the magical community lives in fear of a massacre like that of 12 years ago when Black murdered 13 people with a single curse. I just thought it was an interesting word choice about the gun, a kind of metal wand that Muggles use to kill each other. It's like, okay, well, just that's basically what it is. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
What I drew from this article at this rereading was the fact that the Minister of Magic got so much criticism for alerting the Muggle Prime Minister about the escaped convict.
That's interesting. The crossover is interesting. Is it? It's just because, and I know there's more to the story with this guy, and I know that, but I don't know what that is. So I'll just put that out there. I guess the murder of 13 people was, but these were all wizards, right? It wasn't Muggles.
Actually, it was. It was 12 Muggles and one wizard, I think.
Ew.
Yeah. So, well, what I find interesting is, again, like Sirius Black, you know, they go on to mention, is the first person to ever escape Azkaban Fortress. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really, really big deal. So that in itself shows us that Black is either very cunning and or very powerful.
Yeah.
And so the idea is, you know, again, when you have this person on the loose and still you have this crazy escapes convict, and still there are some people who still treat in the government or whatever in high positions of power who want to say that even in this, you know, bad time, still the Muggles should be left defenseless. Because again, like, you know, Sirius Black, you know, escaped convict, he could come across a Muggle and just kill him. And, you know, would that not matter?
Yeah, it's a little, I don't know what the word is. It's kind of racist, I guess, of them.
That's both, again, it's the deep-seated prejudice that even if you, on paper, a lot of these people say that Muggles, you know, aren't any lesser than enough, just by the sheer nature of the power imbalance, they get into this position where they see themselves as the parent to these childlike humans. But yeah, Black is, he murdered 13 people. It was like not directly like the quote unquote killing curse, like the one Voldemort tried to use on Harry. It was, he just used some sort of curse that caused an explosion and everyone just, you know, perished in the direct range of it.
And I'm assuming this was, it was an intentional. This is the frustrating thing for me right now, is I know there's more to this story. But I just don't know what that more is yet. So I know that I feel like we're getting pieces of information about what happened and Black's involvement. But from the perspective of his fellow wizards, this guy is a bad guy that killed 13 people in broad daylight with one curse. And now he's escaped from Azkaban. Like, that's what we know
right now. And it's pure mayhem because of it.
Yes. Yes. Kind of lucky for Harry in a way in later on. But anyway. And then not lucky. I know. But
Black was a big supporter of you know who, he said. What, Voldemort, said Harry without thinking. And again, showing Harry's naivete that, you know, he just speaks Voldemort's names. Not flippantly, but just normally. And just no one does that in this world.
Right. Right. Yeah. And then he says, you out of your tree. Which is a funny thing to say. And he's chastised for saying his name, which then reminded me of kind of Dumbledore's philosophy is obviously very different than his fellow wizards, because Dumbledore is just like, it's a name. You're giving it too much power. Everybody else in the wizarding world is like, yeah, maybe don't say that. So
anyway, they cornered Black in the middle of a street full of Muggles, and Black took out his wand and he blasted off them. Half the street apart, and a wizard got it, and so did a dozen Muggles. What got in the way? Horrible, eh? And you know what Black did then? Stan continued in a dramatic whisper. What? Said Harry. laughed, said Stan. Just stood there, laughed. And when reinforcements from the ministry got there, he went with them quiet as anything, still laughing his head off.
I don't know what to think right now of Sirius Black. Other
you
than
seem so conflicted.
I know. I just know there's so much more to this story. But all in all, this is the story that these people have. And then he's in Azkaban. He was in Azkaban, and now he's not.
What I found interesting, again, is like, how do you cover up an explosion of that magnitude? And apparently Ernie says like it was a gas leak or something. You know what I would want to be if I were in the, like, had a career in the magical world? I would want to be part of the, it's the department of, the magical reversal squad. Like, I would want to be that person kind of undoing this crap.
That would be an interesting job. I feel like that would be, I feel like that's like Hermione level, what am I trying to say? Intellect that is needed for that to reverse the curses. I don't know, maybe, but I think you could do it. That would be a good job. I'll go hang out with some magical creatures and you can help with the reversal curses. I think that would be awesome.
So just Stan is gossiping in such a way that Harry is like dreading, like just a few nights from now, Stan is going to be doing the same thing with other customers and saying, hear about that Harry Potter? Blew up his aunt. We had him here on the night bus, didn't we? And he was trying to make a run for it.
That, you know, people got to talk about something, I guess. And unfortunately, this is just, again, helped me realize at this point in the story, it was like, oh, I get why Harry didn't share his name immediately, because it would have been, he might have got some free hot chocolate.
Maybe. Or even better yet, a free toothbrush.
Oh my gosh, and any color he wanted too, probably. But that's also, Stan remembered that he owed him some items, specifically some hot chocolate, but then he ends up dumping it all over Harry's pillow, which is kind of obnoxious. But and then they're headed off into the night to get to Charing Cross Road, where they were thundering along. So they're on their way to Diagon Alley.
So lots of witches and wizards got off in Aberdeen, on their way in London, and then they park right outside the Leaky Cauldron, which is the dingy pub that serves as the entrance to Diagon Alley. And so Harry gets up, their dragging his trunk down the steps, barely gets onto the sidewalk where it's, there you are, Harry.
Yeah, Cornelius Fudge. Hey, how are you doing?
Here. How'd you feel about seeing good Fudgy again?
I felt like something was up. And I also, I felt like Harry, like, oh man, it's about to go down. Like, Harry's getting the boot and they're making it really official. But then that was what made it that much more interesting, because that is pretty much the exact opposite of what happened. But he also, Cornelius Fudge, blows his cover to the night bus driver, to Stan. So, sorry, Harry. You got called out anyway.
Yep, indeed. But yeah, it's just me, so surreal. It's like, I know this guy, but it was in the invisibility cloak, so technically, I'm not supposed to know him.
Right. I forgot about that part. Exactly.
And again, I wonder, like, how much of, you know, his experience with this man is that he's a cowardly politician who threw Hagrid in Azkaban for appearance's sake, just to say he did something, even though he himself doesn't believe that Hagrid did it.
Yeah, this is not the kind of best. This is very much a politician-y person, especially when it comes to dealing with Harry's whole situation. It seems very politically driven here in a little bit.
So yeah, Harry thought, like, oh crap, the hammer is going to come down on me. The minister himself has come to, like, execute my punishment.
Right, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too, because blowing up your aunt, I thought was a big deal, but I don't know.
Yeah, so what does Fudge say? Now, then, you will be pleased to hear that we have dealt with the unfortunate blowing up of Miss Marjorie Dursley, two members of the accidental magical reversal department, yeah, those people, were dispatched to Privet Drive a few hours ago. Miss Dursley has been punctured and her memory has been modified. She has no recollection of the incident at all. So that's that, and no harm done.
I would be so confused. And Harry said he couldn't believe his ears and opened his mouth to speak but couldn't say anything. Because last year he was dealing with what, I mean, flying a car all the way to Hogwarts is pretty intense, but kind of creating that disruption and weirdness in the Muggle world seems a little more intense. I don't know. I guess they're not even equal, because I was just trying to think of people saw the flying car.
Yeah, well, and also, like, you know, Harry himself doesn't mention the car, but mentions, again, the hovering charm that Dobby did. Like, with the car, it's not so much that, like, they punished, like, Harry got punished at Hogwarts eventually, but like, the Ministry, it wasn't so much about punishing Harry. It was more about, why was there an enchanted car in the first place, and they went after Arthur Weasley.
Right. And I'm glad that you mentioned the Dobby and the trifle or whatever, that pudding that got thrown across the house. So that was, and that wasn't even his fault, but he still got busted for it. This was, like, I feel this is a weird situation because it was his fault, but it wasn't intentional.
So, you're worrying about the reaction of your aunt and uncle, said Fudge. Well, I won't deny that they're extremely angry, Harry, but they are prepared to take you back next summer as long as you stay at Hogwarts for the Christmas and Easter holidays. Now, I'm sure you'll feel differently once you've calmed down, Fudge said Fudge in a worried tone. They are your family, after all, and I'm sure you are fond of each other, very deep down.
What a way to put it.
So all that remains, said Fudge, now buttering himself a second crumpet, is to decide where you're going to spend the last 2 weeks of your vacation. I suggest you take a room here at the Leaky Cauldron and... Hang on, what about my punishment? Yeah, because again, Harry cannot compute of how are these people treated him so severely last year for a hovering charm that he did not even cast.
Right.
Which, yeah. Again, we had the whole huge discussion last week about stand your ground laws and those allegories. So at this point, it seems that Fudge is very much in the position of this was a stand your ground, that this was a, you know, emotional response that can't warrant any sort of punishment.
That, yeah, that definitely seems like the approach that he's taking, which is, I would be confused as well.
And there's begs the question of, is he taking this position because he genuinely believes that? Or it's because it's Harry Potter, and if another kid did the same thing, the hammer would have come down.
Initially, that's what I thought it was. It was just, oh, it's Harry. But then later on, I kind of, you know, some pieces kind of fall together as to why that happened too.
Circumstances change, Harry. We have to take into account in the present climate. Surely you don't want to be expelled. Of course I don't. Well, then, what's all the fuss about? Now have a crumpet, Harry, while I go and see if Tom's got a room for you.
Pretty easy conversation, which I'm sure he was freaked out about for a while. And then it just kind of ends. It ends really great for Harry.
So basically, he's going to stay at the Leaky Cauldron, and again, not any direct adult supervision, just as long as he keeps his word that he doesn't go out into Muggle London or anything like that.
And he's not really, he's very keen not to break that rule because, you know, the other place he would have been at would be the Dursleys right now. So he's great.
And then there's great central. The thing Harry asks before Fudge leaves is if he could sign his permission slip to go to Hogsmeade.
That was funny because Fudge doesn't do it. And he gives the reasoning that, you know, it's really up to his family to sign it and that rules are rules. And Harry's kind of argument is, well, you're the Minister of Magic. If you kind of sign this, this is kind of official. You can't get any more beyond that. Again, I think this is kind of planting these seeds for what we learn about in the next chapter, the reason that all these adults are being super cautious, because I kind of wonder if what we find out in the next chapter was irrelevant. Would Fudge take this hard stance of like, nope, your family has to sign it. I
can't. And it's just interesting because, again, it shows a very stark difference that Fudge in the case of the permission form is like rules are rules. And this is just, you know, school level stuff. Whereas he just did a very much, oh, no harm done to a big breach, you know, in not intentional, but still a big breach in, you know, the secrecy of their world.
Right. Right. It's
so again, giving...
go ahead.
Yeah. Just as you started to say, giving two very different messages.
Yeah. It's giving all this conflicting information. And
honestly, given to, again, how they sort of treat muggles like children.
Yes.
Again, we've talked about the legality of like the Dursleys and their guardianship. Like, honestly, if they think so little of muggles and they're like their capabilities, then why don't they sort of appoint a sort of magical guardian for someone who handles the affairs, like a wizard or witch social worker that handles all this sort of magical, like, guardian stuff to students like Hermione, who are purely muggle-born with muggle parents, or are in a situation like Harry where they live with muggles?
That's a good question. That would be a legitimate job, and I would think that there's something in the muggle world the wizarding world that would be there to kind of safeguard muggles. I think we just what I'm hearing from our conversations is we really want a Harry Potter book about the bureaucracy of the wizarding world.
So yeah, but Fudge, stickler for the rules when it suits him, says no and is on his way. And Harry goes up to his room and Hedwig's already there.
Yay! I'm so glad Hedwig has arrived and safe and sound. It's wonderful.
Been a very weird night, Hedwig yawned, and without even removing his glasses, he slumped back onto his pillows and fell asleep.
I do that most nights as well, so.
Chapter 4, The Leaky Cauldron. It took Harry several days to get used to his strange new freedom. Never before had he been able to get up whenever he wanted or eat whatever he fancied. He could go wherever he pleased, as long as it was in Diagon Alley. And as this long cobbled street was packed with the most fascinating wizarding shops in the world, Harry felt no desire to break his word to Fudge and stray back into the muggle world. So have you ever been traveling, ever been in this situation where like you're kind of in this interim where you can't go home or you can't go to school, and so you're in a place that isn't home and you just have like a few days or a week to just, you know, do fun stuff?
Yeah, you know, a couple times, I think either by myself or it's all been in the United States. Unfortunately, I am much less well-traveled than Amy is. But this is kind of like that freedom. And I also thought about when we were talking about classism and things like this, that Harry doesn't have to worry about, you know, about kind of the financials of his enjoyment of this time. So which I think is great. Good for him. He deserves it after all those years of Dursley nonsense. But I can think of a couple times when I've had just a kind of empty day in another place and been able to kind of poke around and explore. And it's quite lovely. I hope everybody has that experience. What about you?
Yeah, the biggest one, I've had probably a couple throughout the years, but the one that comes to mind was the week I spent in Istanbul to defend my dissertation, where again, the sole purpose was just one day defending. And again, I was as prepared as I was ever going to be prepared. So the rest of it was just, you know, just trying to do whatever.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That would be really, I'm just imagining that having that kind of freedom in a country like that. And it just sounds fun. I don't know. As long as the dissertation got over with and you had that free time on the back end of it, or I don't know.
Yeah, like, well, it's kind of, again, it was the big thing. It was kind of in the middle of the week with the sprinkling of bureaucracy. But otherwise, yeah, it was just, you know, just chilling in cafes, drinking chai.
That sounds lovely. I'd love to spend some time like that right now.
So Harry ate breakfast each morning in the Leaking Cauldron. And again, he likes to engage in, what do we call it, people watching.
Yeah, he is a people watcher, isn't he? Which is great. I think this is really, like, I was really happy for him as far as just personal development, I guess. Just being able to observe his, like, his people, his fellow wizards, and just kind of seeing what daily life is like for them.
And then he goes on and he no longer has to do his homework in the dead of night. He can do it in the broad daylight, you know, in sitting outside the front of Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor, finishing all his essays with occasional help from Florian himself, who, apart from knowing a great deal about medieval witch burnings, gave Harry free Sundays every half hour.
I guess Harry has a great metabolism, because I would be like 30 pounds heavier after that. But good for him. Lucky guy.
And so, as much as, again, he's not financially hindered in any way, shape, or form, he's having the opposite problem where he has to, like, restrain himself not to go completely crazy because he knows he has the ability to just eat it if he really wants to.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, it's a lot of self-control for a 13-year-old, but he is forward-thinking about his future, though I think he is very tempted by what he sees in the window of, like, a Quidditch shop, Quality Quidditch Supplies, the Firebolt.
Yes, which is, again, I kind of imagine Firebolt, like, broomsticks being, like, iPhones. Like, there's one every year, every 6 months.
Yes. Yeah, and, like, the only thing that changes is so subtle, but it's noticeable enough that if you have the old one, it looks... Yeah, that's such a racket. I don't know, but...
Yeah, because in book one, the latest one is his Nimbus 2000 that McGonagall gets him. The next best one in book two is the Nimbus 2001s, which is what Malfoy gets to show up, you know, himself on the Quidditch team. And then finally by book three, we're at the Firebolt.
This broom is, it says the Firebolt has an acceleration of 150 miles an hour in 10 seconds and incorporates an unbreakable braking charm, price on request, which I thought this was a funny thing to notice. Price on request. Harry didn't like to think how much gold the Firebolt would cost. Same.
And I just kind of got wrapped up in, you know, the handle is made out of ash and all the twigs are from birch trees, I think. So I'm sure there's some sort of dynamic that goes on, just like Ollivander has, you know, his various wands of various woods. I'm sure there's stuff that goes into the making the brooms as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a fancy broom that going 150 miles an hour sounds like a little much, but whatever. Let those kids play Quidditch and kill each other, maybe. That's fine.
But Harry does restrain himself and busies himself with buying all the things he legitimately needs to buy. He replenishes his potion supplies at the apothecary, gets new robes from Madame Malkin's Robes for All Occasions, and buys all of his latest school books, but particularly he needs to get his book for divination.
Yes. And I love how disgruntled this bookseller is when he walks in to Flourish and Blotts, because this poor book, I'm trying to find his name, I can't remember. Basically, this poor bookseller is fighting off all these monster book of monsters. And Harry's like, I'm good. I already have it. So Hagrid did Harry and the bookseller a big favor there. But the divination book. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I love how he does the comparison. Like, I thought we'd seen what the worst when we bought 200 copies of the Invisible Book of The Invisible Book of Invisibility cost a fortune, and we never found them.
It's like, I guess these wizards don't have it all figured out, you know? Some of these things, it's like, why would you make it an invisible book? But it's just kind of funny.
And Harry says, you know, I need unfogging the future. Ah, starting divination, are you? And it's like, here you go. And then he gets distracted. Oh, wait, there's this one thing of... Very good guide to all your basic fortune-telling methods. Palmistry, crystal balls, bird entrails. And I stopped for a moment because I never fully realized this in any other rereading before. Aren't entrails like your intestines?
Yeah, yeah.
And the only way I know that is because I've been reading so much Game of Thrones.
Oh. Yeah.
And that's, I'm just like, bird entrails, what the hell?
Yeah, That, first of all, I know how they kind of show up in Game of Thrones, and It's pretty gross and horrible and violent. And yeah, I always thought that was kind of more in line with like reading entrails. I thought that was more associated with hoodoo or voodoo, but I don't know. Maybe that's just ignorance.
Yeah, but anyway, it was creepy in a way that I never took the time to think about before, because I, again, with all the entrails in Game of Thrones, just made me think of, you know, Sandor the Hound, like Battle of the Blackwater. He says something to the effect to one of the archers, like, you get any of those fire arrows near me, I'll strangle you with your own guts.
Yeah, I believe it too. That's really, really gross. A lot of guts in Game of Thrones. I think about the little rat thing that they attach to somebody's stomach or something. And they put the rats in there.
But I digress. But what gets Harry's attention is one book on display that's Death Omens. What do you do when you know the worst is coming? Oh, I wouldn't read that if I were you, said the manager lightly. You'll start seeing death omens everywhere. It's enough to frighten anyone to death. And Harry is so perturbed by it because it shows a black dog that's as large as a bear. And he kind of realizes that that's what I saw.
Yeah. I do think it's funny, and I think it's just the manager saying that, you know, oh, if you see that, you'll start seeing death omens everywhere. It's kind of like, that's just a funny little bit of human observation, that if you start, you know, you buy a new kind of car, you start seeing that car everywhere, and you're like, everybody has this car. It's like, no, you're just kind of more aware of it. Yeah. So I thought that was cute.
It'll get delved upon more deeply in, you know, in this book, especially in future chapters. But there is a sort of like kind of question mark, even amongst wizards, about divination, because it's, in the most polite way, it's been considered a very imprecise form of magic. And others who just complain that, you know, it's a bunch of rubbish and there are only a few actual legitimate like seers.
Wow. So even in the, it's controversial, even in the wizarding world. That's interesting.
That it is. But we'll get into that later.
Okay.
More days, time goes by, and Harry notices some of his fellow classmates, like Dean, Neville, all of them. And it's on the very last day of the holidays that he finally bumps into Ron and Hermione at the ice cream shop.
Yeah, thank goodness. They're all back again, and Harry has all of his stuff pretty, like, he's had the time, he's been there for a while, he's got all of his stuff, and Ron and Hermione need to obviously get their things, and then I guess Hermione, I hope I'm not jumping ahead too far, Hermione got a little like extra birthday money, so Ron just automatically assumes she's going to go buy another book, which I would have, so whatever. But they go to the magical creature shop to check out some,
what is it, the magical menagerie,
is that what it's called?
But then also Ron happily announces that he's got a brand new wand.
Yes, thank god that. Yeah. Yes,
14 inches willow containing one unicorn tail hair. And all that I know of the the three main interiors of wands in this world is unicorn hair, phoenix feather, and dragon heartstring.
Okay.
So Ron's represents one of those three, and it's kind of implied that unicorn hair is, like, again, pure and shows, like, loyalty, representing Ron's personality, and that of all the wand cores, wands with unicorn hair are the least likely to, like, do well for someone who wants to practice the dark arts.
Oh, okay. Ron seems not likely to practice the dark arts, so he's probably safe there.
What about those monster books, Ed? The assistant nearly cried when we said we wanted two.
Why is this book so? I know that there was a point where the books were tearing like another book apart or something. There were two books attacking another book. Like, why? Again, with the kind of like the invisible book.
I don't understand.
Why?
Right. Like, I understand the like funniness of it, I guess, but the practicality of it is a little lost on me.
And so Harry notices that Hermione's got three huge bags next to her because she's like taking way more electives than they are.
Yes. Very ambitious Hermione. I know how she does this. I know what she's doing. So,
Okay.
Yes. But it is, you know, nobody, I think it's interesting because nobody questions it. They're like, of course, Hermione's taking every class. Probably didn't really think about the like scheduling of that, but.
Got arithmancy, care of magical creatures, divination, the study of ancient runes. Yay. Yeah. We know about those.
Yes.
And muggle studies. And then what are you doing muggle studies for? You're muggle born, but it'll be fascinating to study them from a wizarding point of view, Hermione said earnestly. And she's not wrong.
No, I agreed. I was like, yeah, good point, Hermione. I'm right there with you.
So, again, Ron jabbing at her, you know, get a nice book for your birthday. And she's like, no, I want a pet.
Yeah, she goes in to get an owl, is thinking like that's going to be the thing to do. And then in the meantime, Ron has Scabbers, who is not doing very well since they got back from Egypt. He's skinny and he's got drooping whiskers. Poor Scabbers.
And is he balding at this point?
I don't.
Yeah, so overall, just not doing the greatest. So Ron takes him to the magical menagerie, which, and again, he plops Scabbers up on the counter and the woman's like, how old is he? And she's like, a normal, what powers does he have? Any normal rat shouldn't be expected to live more than 3 years.
Wow.
So this is the third book. But we know from Ron that Scabbers was a hand-me-down, so he was with Percy for a few years. So already, Scabbers is living longer than would be typically expected.
So Scabbers is an old guy, so there's probably something more going on with him
He doesn't show any powers overtly, but maybe he's got some dormant powers that allow him to live that long.
I hope so, because poor Scabbers. He's had a rough go at this point. I know he's old. He's been through the mill. That's what the pet shop person says.
Yeah. And so even the woman asks him, like, if you want a replacement, like there are all these other rats. And Ron just looks at them and is like, show offs. Like, so, you know, Ron always complains about Scabbers being useless and, you know, a hand-me-down. But I think a part of him also sees himself in Scabbers as a sort of hand-me-down.
That's a kind of a sad way to think about it, but I think it's also a very true way to think about it. I appreciate him not being like, yep, let's get rid of this old rat and just get a new shiny black rat. He's sticking by Scabber's side. Good for him.
And she's like, well, if not a replacement, you can try this rat tonic, which is, again, real creative name. Like, we've got Skelegro, we've got Devil Snare, like, this lady couldn't think of anything better to name the rat tonic.
Good old rat tonic. I guess that she isn't spending a lot of time on rats here. But then we get the good old Crookshanks shows up. And
this is Crookshanks' first appearance, basically jumping out of his cage trying to get to Scabbers.
That's so horrible. But there was quite the debacle. Harry says it was either a very big cat or quite a small tiger.
And it took 10 minutes for them to like round up Scabbers again.
Yeah, that was quite a drawn out affair. But they basically leave and they're just assuming Hermione's still there getting
out. Like, was Hermione with them at the magical menagerie? Did she come after? Because she said she wanted an owl, but I think, like, there's specifically a shop that's, like, Elop's Owl Emporium. So the owls were separate from all the other ones. So I don't know if she was with them at this time or not. Either way, she comes back and she's hugging this thing and it's purring and it's happy.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad she took Crookshanks. I love a grumpy cat. So why not? Even though poor Scabber's a little concerned about him, but she thinks he is gorgeous and Ron disagrees, but that's okay.
Yeah, although I'm kind of on Harry's side. Like, as much as I adore cats, again, I'm not all cats can look grumpy on occasion, but I'm just not a fan of the squished face, like Persian cats, like that sort of thing.
It would not be my first go. I can see like the cat's face, those particular cats, and it would not be my first, but
only if it was like super fluffy in a way that made it really, really cute.
Yes. Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, I like all my kidney. I like their face to be defined and not squished.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
I do too.
And this just reminded me of when I adopted the last cat we adopted, like, you know, in my childhood when I lived with my parents, was his name at the shelter was Mervin, but we renamed him to Merlin.
Oh, I like that. That's cute.
And they estimated his age to be like 5 years old. And when we went to go pick him up, all the like workers, employees were so happy because it's like, oh, he's been here so long.
Aw, that's...
And he was also orange like Crookshanks.
Oh, wait, was he like a grumpy cat or was it just...
Oh, he wasn't... No, he wasn't grumpy. He was very cuddly, didn't have a squished face. But yeah, I don't know for... Which is why, again, most of the time, you know, Bacon was the exception because my husband desperately wanted a little baby kitten. But otherwise in my life, I prefer when I go to shelters to get older cats because I know that kittens will get adopted in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yes, they do. They're so cute. And that's good. I know a couple of people that adopt older cats just for that reason because they know they're less likely to get adopted. So I keep up the good work with the older adoption. I have an old lady with me right now, so, and she's not going anywhere. So keep her around as long as I can.
And so they end up going back to the Leaky Cauldron. And yeah, so all of the Weasleys are there and they're staying overnight. Again, from what we know of, again, this may be excess money from the, you know, lottery win.
That's kind of what I assumed too, because
this was not the usual, but yeah, that was the first thing that, you know, caught my eye this time around, because they make the scene of like at dinner time where, you know, they kind of corner Arthur and it's like, why are we getting sent cars? And it's like, oh, I work in the ministry. They're doing me a favor. And it's like, bullshit.
Yeah, that was a little suspect. Now, I didn't realize it had to do with, I didn't put together that it might have something to do with Sirius Black on the loose, but I thought that was a little suspicious.
Yeah, and so that, in a way, it also makes me kind of suspicious that, again, if it's not excess lottery money, then maybe the ministry paid for them to all be at the Leaky Cauldron for this day or two, you know, just for the sake of, you know, making sure they escort Harry.
That makes sense, because it's also would be pretty obvious if, I'm sure people know the connection of the Weasleys and Harry and his probably staying with them. I just where he might be. So interesting.
But before the whole car question, it's so Percy's been made head boy.
Of course he has. He's
and I just got thinking about, you know, just, you know, obviously the Weasley sons and daughter represent a wide variety spectrum of personalities, but it is definitely the most polarizing is Percy compared to the twins.
He definitely is. They're always, everything's a joke. And Percy is very rules and kind of, I don't know, what, very buttoned up, I guess.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that they're so polarizing, yet they're so close in age, because the order of, you know, the birth order is, you know, there's Bill, there's Charlie, there's Percy, there's Fred and George, there's Ron, and then there's Ginny. So I don't think it's a surprise that Percy is the closest to Fred and George in age, and yet they got that direct example of Percy being very pompous and rule-abiding, and they're just like, screw this, we're going to rebel.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that pretty common of, like, the younger half of big families like that? I don't know. I'm the oldest, and I'm all the things that the oldest usually is, and I have a younger
brother. And I'm the youngest, and I'm the rebel.
Yeah, so is my little brother. I'm so that kind of is pretty on brand for what that is. Except Jenny, I don't know if Jenny's personality has been demonstrated. I feel like all Jenny does right now is blush and run away. And so hopefully she's a little bit more developed than that sometime soon.
I'm sure she will be later on. But yeah, just with Percy and Fred and George, and it's just interesting the notion of what fuels Percy's, like, I guess, ambition or drive. Like, I think I'll save my conversation for later books when it becomes more pertinent.
I was going to say, okay, because I was like, I have no idea other than just being a good student. But
so, yeah. So they've got the dinner. They got to do packing. And Harry, Ron's left his rat tonic at the bar. And Harry volunteers to go get it. And we get, of course, it's freaking Harry Potter eavesdropping on another conversation.
Yeah, which is, it kind of brings everything, all the kind of weird things that have been happening with Harry together, as far as kind of some of the passes that he's been given, kind of why they're being escorted to Hogwarts, all those things, because Sirius Black, I guess, has it out for Harry Potter.
So this argument between Arthur and Molly, whose side are you on?
Whose side am I on?
Yeah, in terms of the differing positions that Arthur and Molly take in regards to this matter.
I guess I'm more, okay, so Harry's been through a lot already. And I think that I understand why, you know, the argument that Mrs. Weasley is making, that it would be terrifying and it would scare him. But I think I've fallen more in line with Mr. Weasley in him being wanting to be on his guard and, you know, hypervigilant. And also to kind of know that the guards at Hogwarts are there to protect him. I guess it's kind of also just to be knowledgeable that if he were to find out on accident, that he would be a step ahead. But what do you think? Whose side are you on?
I've always been this way since I was, you know, kid reading these books again, because my dad always claimed that I wanted to be treated as 21, you know, as long as he can remember. I'm always on, whenever this comes up in the series, regardless of which character is promoting the view, I'm always with this thing of Arthur's position of letting Harry know what's up.
I'm not surprised.
And again, we're biased in the sense that all the books are from Harry's perspective, so we see his thought process, and so we know that for as young as he is, we understand how mature he is. So it's not like he just, like, you know, skated death and, like, didn't, like, process it at all. So, like, we know personally from being in Harry's head that he can take it. But I'm like, would I be able to so assuredly say, yeah, I'm on Arthur's side if I didn't have that information, like, about another kid?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I just think, I think we just know too much about what Harry's seen and been through and knows. And if it were like Jenny, maybe I'd feel differently. But, I mean, even though she went through some trauma in the last book, I don't know.
Yeah. And again, just the sense of, like, Harry's thinking, like, Sirius can't be any worse than Voldemort.
Yeah. That's something that I don't know if he has. His assumption there is that Sirius Black can't be worse than Voldemort, but we don't really know. I mean, I don't really know yet. I don't think Harry is like going, oh, there's more to the story because I've lived in, you know, America and pop culture world for years. No, he's just knows that he's kind of experienced the worst of the worst based on what he knows from the wizards around him.
So ultimately he goes back upstairs and plops into bed and is like, I am not going to be murdered. That's the spirit, dear, said his mirror sleepily.
Yeah, this mirror's got some things to say. It was giving him a bad time about his hair earlier. His mirror's pretty fun.
At least the mirror in the Lady Cultrine is a little more polite, not like the one in the Burrows, like, tuck your shirt in, Scruffy.
I could use that mirror. I would, yes, you're right. He's a little, the mirror is a little more polite, but I would take the tuck your shirt in, because sometimes I think I need to hear it.
And that concludes chapter 4. Again, another good chapter. Again, I always love a good Diagon Alley chapter of magic and shopaholism.
Yeah, me too. I could. Now, I have a question. The ice cream place. I have not been to Harry Potter World, but they've got to have an ice cream place, right?
I sincerely hope so. I have not been there, and it is not my intent to go there for the sake of not supporting, for the sake of not financially condoning Harry's ghost writer, She Who Must Not Be Named.
Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't. Well, yeah, that makes sense. It's too bad. It'd be pretty cool. I'm just not going to go because I don't like the crowds of people like that. I'd be freaked out. So that's me. And I don't want to support transphobia too. Anyway.
So are you ready for Gothic Geek Out?
Yes, I am ready.
What gothic things came to your mind?
Well, Sirius Black seems pretty gothic, and the fact that he's murdering people and things like that. I don't feel like there was a, his presence thus far, and we're talking about murdering
the people. Omnipresence of him in
yes.
a way.
Yes, exactly.
If not that, physically, at least thematically.
Yes, exactly. That is very gothic. The tone that kind of is, I can feel, you know, the darkness. And I'm just so psyched that the next chapter is called The Dementors, because I know those are, well, I'm not going to say that, but I just know what they look like and they look pretty cool. What was your gothic element for these chapters?
Yeah, and Sirius Black for his omnipresence, like all those things, but also the black dog.
Good one.
This sort of apparition that is slowly starting to take form in Harry's like mind and memory, and just kind of following that sense of that one apparition that, you know, the person in a gothic novel will see, and sometimes they'll see it more than once and it means something.
Right. Yeah. That's a good one.
But otherwise, not a huge, heavy, you know, gothic chapter, you know, just taking a bus ride and again, diagonally.
Yeah.
With no detours this time into Nocturne Alley.
Unfortunately, I would be fine just being in Diagon Alley the whole time. Like, I don't need to go to that creepy place. I mean, even though it is very gothic.
Alrighty then. Shall we go on to Tarot of the Day?
Let's do it.
I decided to be, you know, prudent, and I actually, like, drew the card before we started recording.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yep, so the card I drew was the Prince of Cups.
Okay.
Or rather, like, that's technically what it's called in my specific, like, Druidcraft deck. If we were to go to the deck you just bought me, which I only got because it was delivered to the wrong condo and I finally figured it out, like, in the traditional one, it's called Knight of Cups.
Okay. Knight of Cups.
And it's usually, of course, you know, a knight on a usually a white horse. So
gotcha.
The Knight of Cups is the classic romantic of the tarot deck. He is in touch with his intuition and emotions, and he uses them masterfully to charm and attract others. He shows compassion and understanding towards others because he has learned to understand his own feelings and emotions. The knight is kind, caring, and very in touch with his feminine side. He might be found writing a romantic poem to his lover, creating an art inspired by his innermost feelings, or appreciating a vibrant sunset with a glass of champagne in his hand. Yeah, that's me, like, you know, glass of wine out in nature.
Yeah, that sounds lovely.
All knights are on a mission, and this knight is humanitarian, and this knight and the knight's mission is the humanitarianism, romance, altruism, compassion, and beauty. You have a vision of harmony and are ready to bring it into reality. You are led by your heart and want to see peace for everyone involved. Oh, interesting for this one.
It is interesting for this one. I guess like a peacekeeper, it so much of it sounds like very decadent and enjoying life and whatever. And I guess like...
That's what Harry's doing right now.
Yes.
Like, in a way, I feel like maybe not fully, but Harry himself does have Knight of Cup leanings. But at least when he's at the Dursleys or even at Hogwarts, when he's bogged down by all of this, I've got to save the world crap. Like, right. You know... He does just want to, you know, indulge in those things and not have to worry about, like, everything else. So I feel like if Harry was not fettered by his, you know, fame, celebrity, and all the situations he finds himself in, that more elements of the Prince or the Knight of Cups would come out more frequently.
Yeah, I think you're...
And so, again, you know, the example they gave of drinking champagne, like watching the sunset, I think the kid equivalent is sitting out in the brightly colored awnings of the ice cream parlor eating ice cream.
I think that's so spot on. Yeah, I feel like Harry's kind of night... I think your analysis was perfect. And yeah, I don't have anything else to add.
Just last note, when it comes to making decisions, the Nine of Cups is ruled by his emotions and his heart. When this card arrives in a tarot reading, you are making decisions based on how you feel about a situation rather than what you think, even if others can't make sense of what you are doing and why, and your intuition guides you in everything that you do.
I think that could be, Harry, I mean, just from the previous chapter, the repercussions of those emotions are kind of what is happening in this, the chapters we read today, but the previous were very much kind of emotions overrun. So,
and even like, I don't know, like the only real decision he makes, like in like these chapters, is kind of like how he's choosing to respond to this news that Sirius Black is specifically targeting him.
Yes.
And he's like, on the surface, it is emotional. It is kind of very rational, but at a deeper, it is kind of emotional that, you know, Voldemort, this idiot can't be any worse.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other aspects of the Knight of Cups that would be applicable in these two.
Well, I feel like elements of the Knight of Cups are true to Harry's personality, but not specific to these chapters.
Yeah, that's.
So we shall leave it at that and go on to the rune of the day.
Just like in Harry Potter, they're going to be learning about ancient runes. I wish I could learn along with them.
Although, it's really sad that Harry doesn't take runes or arithmancy because we never hear about those subjects. So we just get little tidbits. Like, we don't get any serious details, just a few mentions from what Hermione mentions. But the rune I drew is called Naudis or Nautis, like kind of depending. So it's kind of a common, like phonetically D and T or the D, TH are very similar to each other.
Okay.
So it can be Nautis or Naudis. Like even my husband, like those sounds are very close to each other in Persian. And so sometimes when he speaks English, like that TH sound, he'll sometimes use da. And I know what he's saying. And I know what he's saying, but that's kind of like the biggest element that's noticeable in his accent.
Interesting.
But anyway, I digress because I'm a linguistic nerd. But but now D signifies hardship in the form of one's needs not being met, whether this indicates poverty, hunger, unemployment, lack of good health, or lack of emotional support. The rune stave represents the need fire, a ritual fire lit from two large beams of wood that the ancient northern Europeans would light in times of extreme hardship or disaster, such as famine or outbreak of fatal disease. You may be experiencing hardship that limits your ability to move forward or live comfortably, or a strong desire that appears impossible to fulfill. The possibilities are restricted due to your lack of resources, and you are likely chafing at the constraints and are disheartened by your circumstances. So, again, this is Harry and Diagon Alley being very decadent.
Yeah.
So at a very small micro level, the thing that comes to mind is, again, his longing for the firebolt.
That I appreciate you being able to pull that out, because I was sitting here going, I feel like this was these were the chapters where even the Weasleys kind of got a break a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be really hard. It was hard for me to apply that to. I guess Neville wasn't there, but he kind of got the shaft because Harry's like, yeah, sure, I'm Neville Longbottom. But both of these have been interesting tonight as far as their application to the chapters.
The advice of this rune is to treat the situation as a period of learning and or opportunity to strengthen your resilience. And again, the only sort of like hardship, again, the biggest hardship that Harry goes through is, again, reconciling this news that's been, you know, driven home that Sirius Black is after him.
Yeah, it kind of he lucks out in all of his other situations. He is able, you know, this magical bus saves his ass. He, you know, gets to the Leaky Cauldron. He kind of gets a pass on the things that happened at Privet Drive.
If anything, he's in a sort of like now D's mindset of, okay, I'm going to get my ass whooped by the minister metaphorically, and like preparing himself for this sort of hardship, and it doesn't come, and it's like, what?
Right. Yeah. Right. So I lucky Harry this chapter, this rune is not as applicable to his experience right now.
Then, yeah, that's all I can come up with. Anything else?
No, no.
Okay, then. And now we move on to fan fiction time.
I feel like the one that I'm going to go with is really easy and an easy fan fiction to think about, but I'm just going to go with it anyway. And I wondered, what if the night bus never showed up? Would he have ridden the firebolt and put the invisibility cloak on? What would he have done?
Well, I think it begs the question of what would that big black dog have done and what would have Harry felt justified in doing?
Okay. Yeah.
Like, it's not fully explained. Like, is it, like, is the Death Omen, like, is it purely, like, an apparition that only he can see? Or is it, like, a real spectral sentient thing? Like, again, you know, many sort of interpretations based on, you know, Death Omens and that sort of thing.
That scene happens pretty quick. It's like, he sees that. And then there are a lot of scenes in this, in these books that happen very quickly. And then we move on and then it's paid off later. But, yeah, that is just like he sees that and then boom, the night bus is there. So
again, if the dog were to start approaching him, I would like to think that, you know, basically Harry would have, you know, he's like, okay, I got to get out of here, and just immediately done the charms to like fly away on his broomstick. Yes. Or he would have performed some sort of magic in defense of himself, and it would be right there. If he stayed in the neighborhood any longer than he did, then I'm pretty sure the, like, ministry officials who were, like, dealing with Aunt Marge would have caught up with him.
That's a good point.
Because he was on foot, and it's like, yeah, like, even, we're not really given exactly how much time has passed, but, like, he must have called the night bus very, very quickly for the ministry officials to not have seen him.
I also realized, it took me this long, what the black dog is. So I won't say, I'll say it off mic, but I think I figured it out. I don't know.
Alrighty then. And then my fanfic speculation was, what if Harry was punished in some capacity for his transgression?
Interesting. How do you think? I don't think he would have been expelled from Hogwarts. I just don't.
No, that's the thing. Like, that's a kind of ongoing argument about, there's like no sense of level of severity. It's just all expulsion or Azkaban in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what,
so what I would have. If punishment was on the table, I would have liked it to be something like, okay, you're going to do community service.
That would have been good. Or he could have, you know, worked at the Leaky Cauldron for a while or something. I don't know.
Like, but you're going to go wash dishes for Tom, the barkeeper, and think about what you've done.
Yes. Yeah. Even though, like, I would have been a little conflicted because it's like he didn't really know what he... I'm still convinced he did that just kind of without knowing, but the running away part. I'm surprised, honestly, that they were just like, you know, I guess that's something I didn't even really think about, that they didn't say, no, you got to go back to your families. They're just like, cool, you can stay here. I feel like in some cases, like, that would have been punishment enough if he had to go back.
I think their mentality is that with Black on the loose,
right,
his, you know, the Dursleys as Muggles are not in a position to protect him.
Any other time, I think he would have gotten the boot back to the Dursleys, even with that conversation he has with, you know, Fudge, where he's kind of like, yeah, of course, they've always said, like, stay for Christmas. So that would have, do you think that would have been, did it take away from the story that he wasn't punished, or is it, do you think it added to the complexity of the situation that he...
Well, I think either way, like you, he shouldn't have been punished at all, because again, he was forced into a very emotionally charged situation, and he's not in full control of his powers yet, and again, literally was not in a position where he could walk away before it escalated because Marge was being a bitch. So right. Like, he shouldn't have been punished in any way, shape, or form. What adds to the complexity of the story being as it is that, yes, Fudge is doing the right thing, but for the wrong reasons.
Right. Yeah. Because he kind of got, like, he at least got chastised for, you know, Dobby doing something last time. So, I don't know.
That was my not very exciting or thrilling, just thinking aloud.
Yeah, we're just Not that I feel like we're only scratching the surface of this book. So I think they were perfectly fine though.
Alrighty then. And that concludes, you know, our second episode into Prisoner of Azkaban. Tune in next time and we will go over chapters 5 and 6, The Dementor and Talons and Tea Leaves. Catch you guys later. Bye. Bye.
Thank you.